This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Joined in the studio now by Amelia Young from the Wilderness Society. Amelia, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me, Adam.
So tell me, for people that haven't heard of the Wilderness Society, I think they've probably been living under a rock for starters, but what does the Wilderness Society actually do?
Thanks, Adam. Well, the Wilderness Society's been around for about 30 years now, and really it sprang out of the campaign to protect the Franklin River in Tasmania.
Okay.
And we recently saw the 25th anniversary of the High Court decision to stop the damming of the Franklin. So
beautiful.
That's when we realised that we've been around for a while.
Yeah.
And it was a good opportunity to actually look back and consider the significant conservation gains that we've made over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's often due to the good work of the Wilderness Society and all of our members and supporters, but also part of the broader ENGO sector.
Got you. Okay. So with the Wilderness Society, you're more focused, there's a lot of environmental groups out there.
Mm.
Your focus is more on the conservation of, I guess, environmental ecologies, like actual like forests and that kind of thing, or waterways, more than like the animals and that type of thing. Would I be right in saying that?
Well, we have a whole of landscape approach, I guess, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Our flagship campaign or our auspicing framework is called Wild Country.
Okay.
And Wild Country looks at all the different ecological processes in a landscape,
mm-hmm.
and seeks to protect those healthy ecological processes where they exist and rehabilitate those where they have been damaged. So basically, Wild Country is about protecting the best of what's left and then reconnecting those bits so that we don't have a fragmented landscape, particularly in the face of climate change.
And I believe that a lot of the things that the Wilderness Society do, they do a lot of campaigning and working with the politicians and that type of thing.
Well, we do seek to represent the preferences of our membership and supporters by lobbying politicians.
Yeah,
that's one part of the work we do. Yes.
Got you. And what else would you? What would you say would be some of the other main processes that you do as well?
It's also about empowering people to make change. One
yep.
of our core values is actually believing very strongly in the power of people to effect change. And so, one of our roles in a democracy is to enable members of the community to voice their opposition to various kinds of development or industries that are harming our environment.
Because that's the thing that I get from some people is they're all like, oh, the problems are so big and I can't really help. But if every little person did their little bit, that would all add up to a greater sum of a whole, wouldn't it? And
that's absolutely true, Adam. So, we wouldn't exist without the invaluable support of our members over the years. We don't accept government funding and we don't accept corporate funding. So we actually rely on the generosity of Australians, everyday people, to pay their membership dues and give us donations month by month or even large sums of money. There are great opportunities for major donors with our organisation as well. And so that's one way that people can help us. But it's also about people engaging in the political processes, writing letters, ringing radio, going and visiting their MPs, talking to people on the street, having presentations about the work we do in their workplace or in their school or at their sporting club.
Mm-hmm. Do the politicians listen to all those letters? If you write a letter, do you think it makes a difference?
Absolutely. I think we've seen some very significant outcomes here in this state, and I'll just talk about two examples that
yep,
have happened
yeah,
this year,
do.
If I may. This year we saw the last tree being felled in native forest in the Otway Ranges, and I think that the Otways is something that is a place that's very close to the hearts of a lot of people here in Melbourne. It's down on the west coast there, down around Lawn and Apollo Bay, so it's
yep.
a very popular holiday spot.
Oh, it's beautiful down there, isn't it?
And the forests down there, yeah, are just gorgeous. And so this year we saw finally the end of the logging there, and this has been a long time coming. Back in 2002, the Bracks government committed to protect that forest in a national park. And the phase-out meant that a lot of forests still felled in the 6 years since. But the reason that that outcome came about was not only due to the work of peak environment groups like the Wilderness Society, but also due to people writing letters, people going to the forests and visiting the forest, people being there to stop the logging, people agitating in their local communities, having presentations and forums here in Melbourne.
Got you. And other successes as well?
Yeah, the Kabobany National Park, also in Western Victoria,
mm-hmm.
around Portland and the mouth of the Glenelg River there. This is a very significant area. It's the westernmost stands of wet forests, before we hit Western Australia. So it's the last of those types of forest. And then we have the Nullarbor, which means no trees in Latin.
Exactly, and then I drove across it.
That's right. And then we hit WA with the wet forest. So there's been a series of different kinds of negotiations over a number of years, and the local field naturalists in that area have been working for more than 30 years to protect that area. So that's a very sweet victory, and we're very pleased to see those ecosystems now protected.
Now we're going to come back after another song, and we're going to talk about why is it important to protect forests? Because there's a few different reasons. Some may be obvious, but there's some of the couple that I wasn't actually aware of that are quite interesting as well. Adam Barrowley, joined by Amelia Young from The Wilderness.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Joined in the studio this morning by Amelia Young from the Wilderness Society, we're going to talk about wood chipping, Amelia, and the logging industry. It seems to be a constant battle between logging companies and environmental groups. Why is logging bad?
Logging is bad because it severely impacts on a range of forest values. And as you mentioned, these are diverse and perhaps you wouldn't have them all spring to mind when you first think about logging. Logging, of course, threatens endangered and threatened species. It robs them of homes to live in, and it robs them of a range of food sources that many of them need to survive. So species is one thing.
Yep.
Another thing, of course, is water quality and water quantity.
Okay.
Logging severely impacts on how much water flows out of our forested catchments and also on the quality. Young regrowing trees are thirsty, and basically they suck the water that would otherwise be flowing into our streams and into our dams.
Oh, okay.
Including the Maroondah Dam and the Thompson Dam, all these reservoirs where we see those percentage figures in the newspaper every day. What are we down to today? Maybe 34% or something in the dams?
Mm-hmm.
Well, logging is severely impacting on that figure.
Because although they might be seen as doing a good thing by replanting other plants, they're actually going to be sucking more water than an old tree would be. Is that right?
That's right. Exactly. So one of the easiest things the Brumby government can do to secure Melbourne's water future is not build a pipeline that's really controversial or not invest in a power-hungry desal plant that's going to harm the marine environment, but actually take logging out of our forests.
Okay.
So water's another thing. Yeah.
Now, what's happening? Why are we logging our forests? What is most of the wood being turned into or the wood chipping?
That's a very important question. The forest industry here in Victoria is wood chip driven. It's not saw log driven. About 85% of what comes out of our forests is wood chipped and turned into pulp to make paper. And the three main players who use those resources out of our forest are Midway's export wood chip mill in Geelong, where they wood chip our forests and send them overseas, mostly to Japan, to make paper. Another company called Paperlinx also use a lot of the product out of our forests, and they also make paper. They have a flagship product called the Reflex brand, which comes from our native forests.
Okay.
The third main user of our forests for wood chips is SEAFI, the Southeastern Fibre Exports, which is another wholly internationally owned export mill in Eden in southern New South Wales. And that takes timber or pulp from the East Gippsland Forest and the Southeastern Forests of New South Wales.
So am I right in saying the main three players that are actually wood chipping the Victorian forests are actually international companies, not even local companies? So is that right?
Well, the Southeastern Fibre Exports is wholly internationally owned. The point that is significant is not so much about the ownership, but where the forests are going, and they're going overseas. We're not even using them here in Victoria or Australia.
Got you.
And the main thing is that we don't need to be wood chipping our native forests.
Yep.
We're very, very fortunate here in Victoria because we have a plantation estate, mostly in the west of the state, but also in some other areas that we could transition the industry into. And one of our major campaign calls is on the Brumby government to transition the native forest logging industry out of our beautiful native forests and into these plantations, which are purposely planted to be used for this of purpose.
Gotcha.
And that then means that we can continue to have our native forests standing intact and protected for species, for water values, and for carbon banks as well, which is very important in the face of climate change.
Now, one thing I do like about the Wilderness Society is that you actually list a range of papers instead of just sitting there going, don't use this one, don't use this one, don't use this one. You actually recommend papers that people can actually go out and buy. Because I know I've heard a lot of press in the past going, oh, you shouldn't use that one, you shouldn't use that one. I'm like, well, what do I use?
That's right.
So you can find them on your website, is that right?
Yes. Our website is www.wilderness.org. www.bit.org.au. And if you go to the bit that is paper, you will find there an downloadable brochure which lists the papers that we do recommend. And these papers are 100% post-consumer recycled papers. So they've got no native fibre, forest fibre content in them at all.
And I think one of the... I remember you running through the list when I spoke to you earlier on. Some of them are easily readable as well. You don't have to go down to, you know, drive to the middle of nowhere to find some little village town where they've got this brand of paper. I believe places like Officeworks actually sell one of the brands, is that correct?
A number of the brands, actually. They're easily available these days.
Got you.
So there's absolutely no excuse why any workplace or any home can't have ethical paper in their printers and in their photocopiers. And given that the industry is wood chip driven, we actually need to make sure that consumers are well informed and buy papers that don't come from our native forests, because it will make a difference.
Got you. Now, another thing I found really, really interesting, we're talking about what... When I spoke to you earlier, we were talking about needing to save forests because we need carbon banks. And I wasn't sure what carbon banks are. So we're going to come back after another song and explain about carbon banks and exactly what they are and why.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au. Or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
I'm Amelia Young from the Wilderness Society here. One thing I was fascinated about when I first met you, Amelia, is you're telling me about there's a big campaign and lots of campaigns that we need to reduce our carbon footprint. So we need to, you know, use less electricity, we need to walk instead of drive, all those different things, so we're releasing less carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. However, one thing I didn't realise as much is if you chop down all the trees everywhere, it doesn't matter how little carbon you're actually releasing, it's not actually going to get converted into oxygen and... it's really doing no use. Is that right?
We've heard so much about the side of the carbon cycle where we need to urgently reduce emissions, as you say, Adam. There's a key challenge to make sure that we do all drive less and we make sure we turn our lights off and we have energy-saving appliances and all these kinds of things. And it's very important that people do that work, both in a personal capacity and that industry also show a leadership role here and significantly reduce emissions. But what is less talked about is the role of forests and the role that intact vegetation plays in regulating the global carbon cycle and the global climate.
So explain to me a little bit about that. So say reducing our carbon footprint is half the story. What happens on the other side of the fence?
Well, the other side of the fence is that we actually need to cool the planet urgently. To mitigate dangerous climate change, we have to cool the earth, and that means pulling dangerous greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere. At the moment, the only safe, reliable, and proven way we have of doing that is trees. It's an ancient technology which we know does the job really, really well.
It's been working for a few
millennia.
Couple of years, so why question it now?
And so it's actually very oxymoronic to continue to log our forests. And that has a double effect. When we log our forests, we're releasing dangerous greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, mostly carbon dioxide from the above ground living biomass and from the soil, but also methane from the soil as well, which is the most dangerous greenhouse gas.
Okay.
So that's the first thing we're doing when we're logging our forests. We're actually making climate change worse. And the second thing is that we're removing the capacity for the earth to safely suck carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. We have these fancy geosequestration trials, and they may prove fruitful. The CSIRO recently said it looks like we can suck carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, liquefy it, and stash it under the ground. If you ask me, I don't think that sounds particularly safe or reliable. And I don't think it's going to work straight away, whereas trees are doing the job pretty well right now.
So let me get this right. The CSIRO and other companies around the world are coming up with these machines that basically do what trees do, suck carbon dioxide out of the air and somehow convert it into oxygen.
Well, they don't convert it into oxygen, okay. And that's a very important point, Adam. Thanks for raising that. All they do is actually store the carbon underground in aquifers or old mining sites and things like this. Trees do have the added bonus of actually producing oxygen for us as well.
Got you. Now, there's been an ANU report. Tell me about this.
Well, in early August, the Australian National University released the much-anticipated Green Carbon Report. And this report was the result of 10 years' worth of research that's been undertaken by preeminent forest ecologists and carbon scientists. Professor Brendan Mackey led the team, and they published this paper which has revealed that Australia's southeastern eucalypt forests are far richer carbon stores than was previously thought, and that we're really underestimating how much carbon's in there, how much carbon dioxide is released when we log our forests, and this means that we're also underestimating how much the logging sector is contributing to causing climate change.
Wow. So I believe you have some statistics, is that right?
I do.
Hit me with statistics. I love statistics.
Okay. Hopefully some listeners out there like statistics as well. We've only got a couple, so you're not going to get too bored. The IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, has said that forestry operations globally contribute about 18% of greenhouse gas emissions. So that's almost a fifth.
Yeah.
And that's surprising because we're told that, you know, agriculture's really responsible, all those cows, and burning coal to make electricity is really responsible. And that's true. These sectors also cause climate change, but it's important to note that the loggers play a far bigger role than they're actually currently being held responsible
for. Playing one-fifth of the role, really, yeah.
And that 18% figure, that comes from deforestation only, so removing vegetation, land clearing to plant crops. It doesn't count the emissions from forest degradation or logging, such as we have here in Victoria. And the scientists of the Green Carbon Report estimate that if we added the emissions from degradation, from logging, on top of that 18%, it would probably end up being somewhere around a quarter of all greenhouse gas emissions globally that are causing climate change.
Wow.
And we would argue that if that's the case, if it's a quarter of the problem, then it needs to be receiving a quarter of the attention in mitigation analysis and methodologies for actually solving climate change and meeting the climate challenge.
Oh, for sure, definitely. Mm.
So we're calling on the Rudd government to actually elevate the role of forests in combating climate change here in this country and also internationally. There's a key challenge in international negotiations to make sure that forests are properly understood and properly accounted for.
We're going to come back and I'm going to ask you a bit more about what we actually need to do when approaching the governments and that type of thing and how we can actually get it so they are getting that due respect and attention right now. It's a bit of Diana Ross. A song hopefully the forest is singing, I Will Survive.
This is dedicated to my girls.
Adam Barillet with you here for All Natural every Thursday morning on Joy 94.9, your gay and lesbian radio station. I'm joined in the studio by Amelia Young from the Wilderness Society. Amelia, we've had a text message come through and they've asked, do trees actually store carbon or do they just convert it straight to oxygen?
Trees actually store carbon, and
okay.
That's really important. They're actually our most significant carbon banks, and the carbon that's stored in our forest is a significant component of Australia's national carbon accounts. So through photosynthesis, trees suck in carbon dioxide, and they safely store it in their wood, in the above-ground living biomass, so right down to their leaves, and also in the underground system of the tree as well, so the root system and the soil.
How much would trees, like, actually... How do I phrase this question? How much do trees hold in there? Like, how significant is it?
Well, different species store different amounts of carbon. And it's very important to note that the temperate forests in the world store more carbon for longer periods of time than, say, the tropical forests.
Okay.
The reason for this is an intersection of different climatic conditions. So, for instance, the trees that are growing in the central highlands here in Victoria, right on Melbourne's doorstep, that are also our water catchments, are also really, really carbon rich. And this is because they're hardwoods, they're eucalyptus regnans, mountain ash trees, they're very dense, so they store a lot of carbon. But they're also growing at just the right rate. There's enough rain and it's just warm enough, which means that they grow big fairly quickly, and if they're not logged, they can stand for hundreds and hundreds of years and be safe and secure carbon stores.
And this was confirmed by the ANU report that basically said that these forests that we have in Victoria are massive carbon banks.
That's right.
So we've got this evidence that they're great carbon banks, that 25% of the... I've forgotten what our stat was to do 25%. Remind me.
Well, there are estimates that around a quarter of all emissions globally come from removing our forests through deforestation or logging. Yeah.
So what can the government do? What does the government need to do?
Well, we need the government to actually use the right science to begin with. At the moment, the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, has a default value for temperate forests, and they suggest that any nation in the world use a default value of 217 tonnes of carbon per hectare in the above-ground living biomass for any temperate forest anywhere, and that's far below what the Green Carbon Report found. The Green Carbon Report found that the average for the study area, Australia's southeastern eucalypt forests, was 640 tonnes tons of carbon per hectare. So it's out by about a factor of three.
Wow.
But then if we look at the forests of the Central Highlands, it's out by a huge factor of 10. We found there that there are some instances, some stands of forest that actually store about 2,000 tonnes of carbon per hectare in the above ground living biomass. So we're calling on the Rudd government to actually use accurate data. Use data that's come from native forests when they're talking about how much carbon is stored in our forests, how much carbon might be released when we log them, and have a really good look at whether these forests are best left protected as safe and secure carbon banks, or should we continue to wood chip them and export them overseas.
And is the Rudd government listening?
It's an uphill battle. We need to get the community behind us. Yep. We've seen some significant conservation gains over the years, like the Franklin, like the Daintree, but these challenges are many and they're big, and we need to make sure that Australians help us elevate the role of forests in combating climate change.
I guess one thing, because Wilderness Society works a lot with politicians are busy people. They must have people. There's the environmental sector, but there's so many different sectors and everyone's, I guess, pushing their campaign. Mm. They must get so many people wanting to talk to them and get them to do action on something. Mm. Is that right?
Mm.
Does the Wilderness Society find that a frustration or a struggle that they have to compete with all the time?
It's an ongoing challenge. That's right. And all of these issues are very important. There's a big spectrum, as I'm sure every listener knows, of a range of social justice issues and environmental justice issues that we need to solve. But that's part of being in public life. That's part of what these politicians choose to grapple with when they actually enter Parliament, is to accurately represent their constituents and actually take charge of these situations and solve them, play a leadership role. So they're putting themselves up as listeners, I guess, and yep. We need to make sure we're jumping up and down and they've got something to listen to.
Got you. So it's very important that we jump up and down. There's lots of different things that we can do. We're going to come back after another song and we're going to talk about a couple of rallies and different things that people can actually do.
Opportunities
to make a difference. And start stopping this logging that's happening all around Victoria and Australia, I guess, as well.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Stacey Orrico, and I'm not missing you. She's talking about a boyfriend, not the forest, because we'll definitely be missing them if they get logged.
That's right.
Now, if you'd like to send through a question at any time while I'm talking to Amelia or any of the guests today, 0427 JOY949 or onair at joy.org.au are the ways to do it. If you include your member number as well, you go in the running to win a double pass to see the Blue Waves that are performing on top of us on the Joy rooftop next Friday from 7 o'clock. I'm also giving away our book of the week, The Shallow End, by Ashley Sivright. Darren has sent through a question and says, when we have bad bushfires and the trees are destroyed, does this release the carbon?
Thanks for the question, Darren. It's a very good one and quite topical as we head towards summer.
Mm.
No. It doesn't release most of the carbon, contrary to popular perceptions. Actually, logging releases more carbon than bushfire does, and one of the reasons for this is that a clear fell logging operation churns over the soil incredibly. I don't know how many listeners have actually ever been to a clear fell logging coop. It's pretty devastating, can be pretty upsetting. I've been there and taken people visiting and they've ended up in tears. It's very confronting. But the point is that the soil is incredibly overchurned, and the top 30 centimetres of the soil profile actually stores a huge amount of carbon, particularly in our mountain ash forests here in Victoria. So a logging operation is a bigger greenhouse gas release event than a bushfire. Of course, a massive bushfire, such as those that we've seen here in Victoria in recent years, do release huge amounts of carbon. But the other point to be made is that a clear fell logging operation removes all of the above ground vegetation. There's very, very few trees left standing. In a coop, a logging area that's to be logged, they might leave a couple of trees, which they call habitat trees, for our poor creatures to live in. And I don't think the little leadbeater's possum likes that very much, because they can be pretty easy pickings for owls if there's only one tree and not a forest canopy to hide in.
Got you.
And another tree that might be left standing might be what they call a seed tree, which they leave deliberately to release its seed and reseed the area. But other than that, all the ferns are removed, all the trees, all the rainforest species like lily pillies and sassafras, all of the acacias, all of that's removed. And so all of the carbon that was safely stored there previously is gone. When a fire goes through, a lot of those species do burn as well, but the huge old trees are left standing. If they're killed by the fire event, then the carbon is still stored in the charcoal. If they're not killed by the fire event, then the carbon is still stored and they're continuing to sequester carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
Got you. Thank you very much for that. That's very good indeed. Now, we're talking before about water, and logging reduces water quality and quantity because younger trees, although the logging industry may be doing the right thing and planting some more good trees in place of the ones they're chopping down, they suck a lot more water out of the ground, and that's probably contributing to the fact that we're actually on water restrictions here in Victoria. I believe you've got a rally that's happening later on in November.
That's right.
Tell me about it.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, Melbourne is renowned for internationally renowned for having water of good quality. And we used to have a lot of it as well. Now we don't. And there's a range of reasons for that. One of those is the drought. It's because of climate change. It's because of bad water management. But it's also because we're logging our forests. The area of the Central Highlands does have a national park in it. We've got the Upper Yarra National Park. And some of our forested catchments are protected in the national park. But contrary to what most Melburnians believe, some of our catchments are not protected. We're not allowed to go walking in them. We can't go bird watching. We can't go mountain bike riding. We can't go bushwalking in these forested catchments like the Armstrong or Cement Creek. But come every summer, the loggers are allowed in to clear fell log these forests and thereby impact on all the different kinds of forest values, including water. So yeah, thanks for mentioning the rally. It's coming up on Sunday the 23rd of November out in Warburton, which is one of the regional communities that is very, very affected by the logging regime in that area.
How are they affected by the regime?
Well, not just because the logging is right on their doorstep and the trucks go past. And obviously when big logging trucks go past, it's noisy, it's polluting, there's huge releases of dust on the dirt roads. They're also affected because their catchments, it's not just Melbourne's water catchment, it's also water catchment for these local regional towns as well. The tourism industry is also heavily impacted by the logging industry. Huge scars on the landscape don't exactly make a nice trip for people.
Exactly. I guess you wouldn't really want to drive for a couple of hours and go check out a beautiful bit of dirt. Mm.
No, and, you know, it's interesting because the industry is devious and they do try and log in areas that aren't visible from major tourist routes. But there are, you know, coops scheduled every summer in areas where tourists might be able to see them, and in fact do. So this is an ongoing challenge for the tourism industry up there. They're competing with the native forest logging industry.
Wow. Now, it's a bit of a monumental day today. Something has happened today. We're going to go to another song, a bit of Britney Spears, and then we're going to come back and find out what's just kicked off today. You're on Joy 94.9. It's All Natural with Adam Barillet, joined in the studio by Amelia Young from the Wilderness Society.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9, All Natural with Adam Barillet, joined in the studio by Amelia Young from the Wilderness Society. Now, Amelia, today is a monumental day, but not a good monumental day. Tell me why.
Well, today the forests continue to fall in Brown Mountain in East Gippsland. And this is an area of very important forest that has been fought for many, many years by a range of different conservationists and community members.
Now, let me get this right. Wasn't that area promised to be looked after by the government?
The Brax government in 2006 made an election commitment to protect 41,000 hectares of old growth and icon forest in East Gippsland. We're still waiting. This process has been long and drawn out, and environmentalists have exercised a good degree of patience while we've waited for the government to go away and do a series of mapping around old growth, and I guess a range of negotiations with the industry as well, of course. And we've put forward Brown Mountain as one of the areas that we would like to see protected as part of this process, alongside other areas. Because, of course, the government did recommend some areas in their first proposal, and some of them, quite frankly, weren't even old growth. We went out and did some ground truthing, and over west of the Snowy, there was an area that actually was completely cleared, infested with weeds, and had a sign which said, "Beware of cattle on road." So effectively, it was a cow paddock.
Yeah.
And they were trying to say it was old growth, and they were going to deliver that as part of their promise.
Wow.
They've since reorganised themselves and said that that's no longer the case, but tragically, Vic Forest have sent some logging contractors into Brown Mountain.
And I believe Premier Brumby's office's response to what they're actually doing is, since Vic Forest has moved the contractors in, there's nothing they can do now. So once they're in, we can't take them out.
Yeah, that's the word from the government. Unfortunately, we continue to be patient over the weekend and give the government time, give the Premier's office time and Minister Jennings' office time to actually pull the contractors out of there. But it seems that Vic Forest belligerence has won out. So the question is, who's actually in control of Vic Forests, which is an extension of the Department of Sustainability and Environment? The Premier needs to take the lead here, take control of Vic Forests, and get the logging contractors out of Brown Mountain.
So what's Wilderness Society going to be doing from today onwards for this situation?
We're continuing to negotiate with the government around this very important and iconic area in East Gippsland, and continuing to pressure Vic Forests, the Premier's office, and Minister Jennings' office, he's the Minister for Environment, to actually do something about this situation and continue to negotiate with environmentalists in good faith to make sure that the 41,000 hectares is delivered almost 2 years after the promise was made, and that the areas that are protected in that promise are really areas of significant old growth.
Do you know how quickly they're actually going to be logging that area? Like how much hectares per day or that type of thing?
Well, it depends what kind of protests are happening on site. We've seen concerned environmentalists go to the site, and I encourage anyone who wants to see what's going on for themselves to head out to Brown Mountain and have a look at this logging operation. And these conservationists have been successful in stopping the logging. There's been arrests, and we've seen the logging contractors unable to work, which is absolutely fabulous. Today, that's not happening. Unfortunately, these conservationists haven't been able to stay in the coop due to threat of more arrests, and the loggers are moving in and removing these beautiful, magnificent trees. There's a Valley of the Giants in Brown Mountain, and the area has been marked out by locals and has been assessed by Parks Victoria as an area of irreplaceable grandeur that would be wonderful as an old-growth forest walk.
And is it a walking track at the moment?
A walking track has been marked out, Adam, yeah.
Yep. Wow. What can people do?
What can people do? Go and see the forest. It's a pretty good motivator. And go and actually be there and try and help stop the loggers. People can also email John Brumby at john.brumby@parliament.vic.gov.au and express their opposition to the logging of this area and our other areas of beautiful native forest in this state. Another thing you can do is actually call the Premier's office on 9651 511. That's 9651 511, and express your outrage at the logging of Brown Mountain.
I guess also writing letters to the key media parties as well, such as The Age, The Herald Sun, things like that.
Yep, letters to the paper are also very important, and over the years we've seen some very interesting and relevant things published in the letters pages. It is important. The politicians do look at what's published in the letters pages of The Age and The Herald Sun and other newspapers. Also, online publications are an excellent opportunity for people to express how they feel and what their preferences are for our forests.
Time is running out very, very quickly, but I do want to come back and tell people what they can do. There is lots of different things they can do to help support the Wilderness Society, stop logging around Victoria and, I guess, Australia as well. We're going to have one more song very, very quickly, and then we're going to come back and find out all about that. You're on Joy 94.9, All Natural with Adam Barrow. You're on Joy 94.9. Adam Barrowley with you here for All Natural every Thursday morning from 9 until 12 noon. Had a message coming through from Jo. She says, we need more people like you. Keep up the great work. Well, Jo, we need more people like you that can actually get out there and make a difference as well. So, Amelia, let's talk about things that listeners can do. Start with Brown Mountain.
Starting with Brown Mountain, if people want to see pictures of the area before it was logged and after it's been logged and find out what they can do, they can visit the Wilderness Society website or Joy FM's website or Gecko's website, which is geco.org.au, and that stands for the Goongra Environment Centre, and that's the environment centre out in East Gippsland, which has been campaigning for the protection of those forests for years and years.
I'm guessing as well as pictures, there would also be suggestions there on different actions.
Absolutely.
That people can take as well.
Latest updates from the front line, email addresses, phone numbers, suggestions for important points that you could include. What are the ecological values of this area? If you want to find out more, that's where you go.
Got you. Now, we mentioned on the show earlier today, there is a rally at Warburton on November the 23rd. Tell me the exact details for that one.
Right. The rally is called Our Forests, Our Water, Our Climate. And it's a rally in Warburton to protect our water catchments from wood chipping. Sunday the 23rd of November. And you meet at 11:45 a.m. at the Rotunda on Warburton Highway in Warburton, which is just out past Lilydale. If you go to the Wilderness Society website, you'll find details of how you can get there in a climate-friendly way.
Beautiful. And of course, the Wilderness Society website is wilderness.org.au. You also have a Green Carbon Public Meeting.
We do. Part of the work we do is to educate the community, and we're really interested in making sure that people who are concerned have ways of finding out about this green carbon science. So we're conducting a series of green carbon action forums or public meetings where people can come along and have the science explained to them and find out what they can do. These happen all over Melbourne, and the next one is in Mitcham. So if you live in the eastern suburbs around Blackburn or Mitcham, you can come along at 7 p.m. on Thursday the 27th of November to the Field Naturalists Club of Victoria. That's 1 Gardenia Street in Blackburn, to find out more about green carbon and what you can do to help us protect Australia's carbon banks. I'll also mention that the Green Carbon Report is downloadable from the Wilderness Society website once
Beautiful.
Again.
Now, one thing I do love that the Wilderness Society does, not everyone likes to necessarily write a letter or that kind of thing, but you can still let the politicians know that you have an opinion. You've got some great postcards.
We do. At the moment, we've got 2 postcards about our forest campaign. One is Victorian-specific, carbon bank or climate change. And we're encouraging as many Melburnians and Victorians to sign these as possible to send a strong message to the Brumby government to help secure Australia's forests as carbon banks.
Where can you get hold of those postcards?
They're in Avant card racks. They're in various cafes. They're at the Wilderness Society Campaign Centre in Brunswick Street in Fitzroy. And they're here.
They are going to be here in the next few days. You can come up to Joy at Level 9, 225 Burke Street, in our foyer, just as you pop out of the elevators, we'll have the postcards there. All you do is you put your name and your address, signature, pop a stamp on it, and off it goes. Easy as that. Takes 1 minute.
That's right.
To make a difference. Now, the Wilderness Society relies on a strong base of volunteers as well?
That's right. We have a Wilderness Action Group which meets every Tuesday night at the Campaign Centre, Level 2, 288 Brunswick Street, Fitzroy. And we welcome anyone who wants to be involved in our campaigns to come along at 6:30 on Tuesday nights to find out about campaign updates, help us with a range of activities from databasing postcards to painting banners to building props, all kinds of really fun things, and being part of a really wonderful team that's fighting to protect Australia's wilderness.
So you need people with all different skill sets, but basically you just need people that are passionate about making a difference, really.
That's right.
Amelia, thank you so much for coming in today. It is so important to make sure we reduce, well, stop, I guess, logging in all these places because of the value that trees have in the ecology of the world, basically, in being carbon banks. If we lose all our trees, we're going to be in trouble, aren't we?
We're already in pretty deep trouble, and continuing to log our forests is making climate change worse and not solving the problem.
Amelia Young, we'll be in the next month. We're going to keep you up to date of all the great things that the Wilderness Society is doing. Another way to do that, of course, is go to their website, wilderness.org.au. You're on Joy 94.9. Adam Barrowley with you here.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.